Welcome to the Physician Associate Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Physician Associate Podcast. My name is James. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Afak Ali Sartaj, who is a Physician Associate in Neurosurgery. Welcome to the show, Afak.
Thank you, James, for having me.
Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate you giving up the time. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Afak Ali Sartaj. I am currently working as a Physician Associate in Neurosurgery at Royal Preston Hospital up in Lancashire. My background is an undergraduate degree in cognitive neuroscience and psychology from the University of Manchester. I remember being in my final year of my undergraduate degree, and I always knew that I wanted to study further. I just quite wasn't ready to move into a job straight away, and I always had a passion for learning anyway and being in teaching.
And it's really grown quite quickly in the Northwest, isn't it?
Yeah, so at the University of Central Lancashire, where I did my training, and I also teach there at the moment, some clinical skills and some communicational skills, we have an undergraduate program now as well, where you can do a four-year undergraduate degree in physician associate studies.
How is it in terms of the profession up around where you are in your part of the country? Are there quite a few PAs now coming out? Are job prospects still strong for PA students?
Yeah, so it's interesting, actually. When I was a student myself, a lot of my placements were done throughout the Northwest, to be honest with you, from Blackburn Hospital to Preston Hospital, Lancaster and Blackpool. And there weren't many, if any, physician associates qualified at that time, if I'm being honest with you. Maybe there were two that I remember in the whole region. So it was very difficult as a student trying to get the, you know, on the ward teaching, really. No one really knew what your role was, what you could do, what your competencies were. But now, if I'm being honest with you, we have 12, I think, at Royal Preston Hospital in total, PAs, ranging from respiratory, gastro, colorectal surgery, neurosurgery, obs and gynae. And in Blackburn, it's pretty much the same case. They have about 10 or 15. So there's a lot of PAs now, actually, which helps the newer generation of PAs coming along, because it means they have someone to look up to and help them on the wards. Not only that, but the other healthcare professionals are now also used to us being on the wards, and they know what we can and can't do. So that all helps, really.
Okay, let's bring it back around to your love of all things neuro and the brain. Yeah. What is it about the brain that really interests you as a part of medicine to study?
So initially, my dad, he never really had any issues with his health, never really complained of any headaches or anything as such. And then one night I remember he woke up with these really severe headaches, didn't really understand why. So we went to A&E to see what we could do. They gave him some analgesia, sent him home and said, you know, see how things go. If it persists, then come back in. About 2 weeks later, he complained of those similar kind of sudden kind of severe headaches, went into A&E again at my local hospital, and they finally managed to get a CT scan on him because he was vomiting along with the headaches this time. And out of nowhere, they found a brain tumor and said, we'll have to refer you to the neurosurgeons, which to us locally is Preston Hospital. And they said they will be in touch with you and with regards to, you know, the further management of things. And then I was quite naive at the time, and I was pretty young, to be honest with you, so I had no idea about brain tumors or cancers or anything like that. I was completely oblivious to all of it. Anyway, about 2 weeks later or so, we see the neurosurgeons at Preston Hospital and say, look, we can only tell so much from a scan, but it looks like, you know, it's something quite serious that we need to operate on quite soon. Otherwise, it looks like the tumor is growing quite rapidly. So literally within a space of 4 weeks, we've gone from headaches to a scan to a brain tumor to having my dad admitted at the hospital and having undergone a big brain tumor resection. And then about 2 weeks later, we got the results of the histology and found out that it was a cancerous tumor. And during that period, about 2 or 3 months when he was admitted, I was doing my final year exams and stuff, and in the background of it all, just researching things as you would do, you know, trying to figure out a little bit more about what it is and how you treat it and going forward, what, you know, what the prognosis is, et cetera. So that's where it all kind of stemmed from. The fact that obviously, and that was my first experience of being on the wards in a hospital ever in my life. having seen all of that, I kind of developed an interest in neuroscience. So I ended up applying for a neuroscience degree, finished that. And then I thought the physician associate studies was quite, you know, something that I was really interested in based on my personal experiences and also my undergraduate degree and going forward what I wanted from life.
Oh, bless you. Oh, bless you guys. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. So, I guess it's not something that's covered in great detail during your PA education as a student. I can't recall myself learning much about neurosurgery in great detail. Did you get particular exposure to neurology and neurosurgery when you were a student?
It's a really good question again. To be honest with you, we get some medical students that I teach in the department as well, and they literally get a 2-week block out of the 5 years that there is, you know, of their medicine degree to do neurosurgery. And even that split between neurosurgery and neurology. So they're only ever really with us for about a week or so. As a PA, I got zero experience in neurosurgery or even neurology, to be honest with you. It was all the other kind of core medical blocks that you get exposure to rather than the subspecialties anyway. And it kind of depends on sometimes where you get put, really. You can have an elective and you can choose one, but more often than not, you get put in a GP or something like that, wherever they can accommodate you, really. With regards to having been taught on the PA program, not really, not much, because it's not on the matrix, really, is it? So learning about CT scans or neurosurgical kind of diagnoses as such, you don't really get covered on. Although, having said that, I know they touch upon it now where I teach anyway about, you know, subdural hematomas and extradural hematomas and subarachnoid hemorrhages. But no, I don't think there was any formal kind of neurosurgical teaching what I do. And I suppose it goes for a lot of the other guys who qualify in other subspecialties. It's all on the job learning more often than not. For me, I think I'd say it took me at least 6 months before I felt confident and competent enough on the wards to be able to manage patients that were admitted to us. So I suppose this goes out for all the other guys who are about to graduate or feel a bit anxious. You're not expected on day one to be out there being absolutely confident and competent in treating all these, you know, conditions that people present with. It's going to take you some time on the ward, you know, learning from your colleagues and just being familiar around your team and knowing your own competencies.
Absolutely. I think that's a really fair comment to remember, isn't it? A PA is not the finished article on day one, just like any medical professional is. Mm-hmm. Is not expected to walk into the job and be perfect from the beginning.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through what a normal day looks like in neurosurgery for a physician associate? What do you actually do day to day?
Usual stuff in the morning. You come in for handover 8:30 or 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. Night registrar's there, your day on-call registrar will be there, and then, you know, the on-call consultant, and then the juniors or myself, the USHO. We talk about the night referrals, we go through the scans, there's a bit of teaching involved, which is obviously very good, and then talk about some of the admissions that might have come in overnight. And then after that, do your ward round, see the new admissions or see the post-ops or the pre-ops for that day, for that matter. And then compile a job list as you would do in any of the other wards, really. That could be anything from requesting scans to reviewing bloods to, you know, doing a lumbar puncture or inserting a lumbar drain, pre-op workups. So, you know, the usual kind of ward jobs. And then from then on, just splitting the jobs up between yourselves, the PA or the SHOs. And at the end of the day, then just handing over, making sure all the jobs are done. Anything to hand over to the on-call SHO, and then you do the same next day.
You make it sound so easy, like what's that saying about brain surgery? Lumbar punctures, you mentioned, they're not a skill that PAs come out of the course knowing what to do. Is that something you've developed since in your training?
Yes, absolutely, all on the ward. So we're very obviously in a neurosurgical ward, lumbar drains and lumbar punctures are kind of the standard norm. We have at least maybe 4, 5, 6 a week, sometimes a couple a day. So there's plenty of opportunity to learn. I probably did about 5 or 10 before I thought, okay, I feel confident and competent enough now to be able to do them independently. And since then, I've come a long way, really. So a lot of the SHOs that we get or the junior doctors that we get, end up not having had much neurosurgical experience, like we talked about earlier, if at all any. So surge procedures for them are completely new to them, although some of them might have come across them. So I've taken a big role on to passing on and teaching them now and supervising them in, you know, lumbar punctures and lumbar drains, but also things like insertion of ICP bolts, like intracranial pressure monitoring, which is something that we do if someone's, you know, sedated and or intubated and ventilated. We don't really know how to monitor their GCS or their consciousness level. So we have to put a small burr hole into the skull and then insert a little wire into the brain to measure the intracranial pressure. So that's something that I do as well. You know, I'm trying to teach the new guys that are coming as well, the new senior house officers in that as well. I think I'm very blessed is what I'm trying to probably convey here. I work in a department which is very, very supportive. It's not the biggest neurosurgical department in the country, but it's also not the smallest. It's somewhere in between. And I think that's really good because we have a tight-knit department where, you know, there's not that hierarchical kind of structure that you might have in some of the other places where everyone's competing to get things done, you know, for their own logbooks and things like that. Whereas the department that I work in is much different to that. Everyone's just kind of supportive of each other and of the physician associate role in general and helping each other out wherever you can, really, rather than competing against each other.
I mean, the clue's in the name.
Absolutely.
Physician associate, that association is so important. One of the big, I guess, questions for physician associates and jobs in general is at the moment we're not regulated. We know that the GMC will become a regulatory body in the near future, hopefully. But until we're regulated, we can't begin to think about ordering ionizing radiation scans or prescribing rights.
Yeah.
In neurosurgery, I guess there's a great need for CT scans, obviously, and things like that. Is that a problem in your day-to-day work that prevents you from working effectively?
Yeah, absolutely. It used to really frustrate me quite a lot. I've sort of kind of gotten used to it now, to be honest with you. But obviously, I'll get a call from one of the nursing staff saying one of the post-ops has dropped their GCS. Can you please come and review them? And I'll go over and quite clearly they need an urgent CT scan. And things are all well if there's plenty of us on the shop floor. But if we're having one of those days where either we've got fewer members of staff or there's quite a few unwell patients and someone's attending to someone else, it could become quite a hindrance. And in that case, you know, sometimes you either have to wait to find someone or in my case, I just try and go to my on-call registrar and say, look, this is a problem I'm having. Please, can you request me a CT brain? To answer your question, it is a problem, but I'm lucky enough that I have a lot of support around me. I can always just go up to the on-call registrar if I'm really struggling and explain the situation to them and let them know I need an urgent scan and I can still get things, you know, still get things done. But there have been times and occasions previously where I've been really frustrated.
And what about learning to read CT scans as well? Because I imagine that's a large part of the day is interpreting scans and looking at the results of the pictures. It's not something that comes up in PA training often.
No, you're right. I think we touched on this earlier, didn't we? Like as a PA on the course, you're not really taught much neurosurgery, if any, at all. And you might be shown some scans and told this is what a subarachnoid hemorrhage looks like, this is what a subdural hematoma looks like and an extradural hematoma, but they always show you the textbook, the biggest subdurals that you could ever find that are hard to miss. But when you work you know, on the job, this is what I was saying earlier as well, it takes time for your eyes to adapt and kind of, you know, you've got to see a lot of normal scans to then be able to identify what an abnormal scan looks like. And sometimes you can get the smallest, the thinnest subdural hematomas that could quite easily be missed by anyone else. But, you know, you've just trained your eyes over the years and haven't seen so many scans that you kind of get used to it. But even today, like even to this day, sometimes I see some of the scans and they've got the thinnest blood clot that you could ever see. And it just so happens to be that the neuroradiologists have reported it, that you end up seeing, you know, the abnormality. So it could be quite easy to miss. However, like I said, we get, you know, the morning handovers and there's plenty of teaching opportunities. We have what we call a journal club every week in my department, which, you know, all the juniors, including myself, will end up presenting some sort of a neurosurgical paper. So there's a lot of teaching involved and you just kind of, I suppose, with any other specialties, your eyes become trained to it eventually.
Brilliant. Really fascinating so far. Like I don't know of any other PAs who are working in neurosurgery. I haven't heard of any locally to where I am. To your knowledge, are there many PAs working in neurosurgery?
If I remember from the last consensus that the PA put out, there were four of us nationally, maybe five now, actually.
How many is that? Five. Wow.
Yeah, the majority of them are down south. I think I'm the only one that I know. There's none in Manchester or what the Walton Centre, which is Liverpool.
Okay, that's interesting. Which leads me on to ask, if there's a PA student listening to this episode of the podcast who's got burning desire to get into neurosurgery, mm-hmm. what advice would you give them? What do they need to do to make themselves competitive? Where should they be looking for jobs? What should they say at interviews to put themselves forward?
Yeah, I think it really would help massively if there is a PA student out there who wants to work in neurosurgery to have some sort of exposure off the job as a PA on the ward. I would suggest to ask, you know, email the local department wherever you are and see if you can get some exposure, because I found that it sounds really cool when you hear neurosurgery, but I've had a few students who have come and thought brain surgery is just not for them, which is fair. It's not everyone's cup of tea. And that's just because of, you know, it could be quite gruesome. And I felt like they've not really enjoyed it for that reason, you know, drilling into someone's head. And a lot of our patients are very, very unwell on the wards. So some PAs that have been students have also felt anxious about the fact that they are going to be managing these really, really unwell patients who are potentially on the verge of life or death. But again, that, you know, you get plenty of support on the ward, so I wouldn't feel like that kind of pressure at all. But for me, I think if you really want, you need to go and get some experience on the job to see what a PA can do and what, you know, where you think you can fit in into a department. And then the other thing for me is, depending on which department you end up applying to as well, be mindful of that, because I know that especially in neurosurgery, it's a very, very competitive field for the junior doctors to apply and get into a training program into. And for that reason, there's a lot of competition regarding theatre cases, theatre time, practical, you know, procedures on the ward. So you want to have some sort of development going forward. So you want to make sure you're in a department where you are going to be supported in that. And like I said, I'm just very lucky that I've ended up being in the department where they push me to go into theatre and assist, and as well as that on the wards, do as many of the procedures that you can do to help your own logbook as well.
As a physician associate in neurosurgery, you mentioned it's obviously quite competitive for the doctors to get into, and mm-hmm. I guess training time and theatre time in particular might be quite pressured. Do you get a lot of time in theatres? Are you assisting in operations? Is that part of your job, or is that part of the future that you'd like to get into?
Yeah, so again, brings me back to, I keep going on about my diploma, but it's really good, and I promise you I'm not being paid to say this, but I'm put on the junior doctor rota. So I get one day in theatre. We all do. We kind of rotate amongst ourselves, and we get one day in theatre. So my day in theatre, we have four theatres running on a daily basis, more often than not, considering there's no, you know, surgical or anaesthetic shortages. I tend to go more for the cranial stuff because we do spines as well, but spine don't really interest me as much, although that's the bread and butter of neurosurgery. About 60 to 70% of our caseload is actually spine. But I tend to join the tumours and the subdural hematomas. I have a very, they've given me a very good developmental role in theatres in my department. So because of my undergraduate degree being a neuropsychology degree, we do a lot of awake craniotomies. So these are, for people listening that might not know, these are tumours that are in eloquent areas of the brain where the speech centre of the brain or the motor areas of the brain might be involved by the tumour. So the safest way to approach these tumour resections would be to put the patient to sleep and wake them up intraoperatively once you've exposed the brain, and then to do some intraoperative awake assessments with the patient whilst the tumour is being resected. And then the idea is, anytime you say, for example, the tumour's in the speech department of the brain, anytime your patient comes across some sort of dysphagia intraoperatively, then you would stop there because you don't want to cause them permanent speech deficits. So that's one of my roles right now at Royal Preston. So I assist my neuro-oncology consultants in the awake surgery. So I do the awake assessments, I do the awake part. When the patient wakes up, I test their speech with various different tasks that we have. And similarly, if it's in the motor component, then we do some different motor tasks. And then I kind of let my surgeon know if there's any deficits at all, and then we stop right there. So that's one role that I'm developing at the moment. And then with regards to actually scrubbing up and operating, so there are things like subdural hematoma evacuations that I can pretty much do on my own independently, as well as assisting in some of the big operations with the consultants or the senior registrars.
Wow, amazing. Really exciting. Yeah,
pretty cool.
And I guess just final question then. Mm-hmm. Where do you see your job moving forward? So what do you think the future for your job as a physician associate in neurosurgery looks like down the line? What would you like to achieve next?
So one of the things I just touched upon, the awake craniotomy that we have going on, we're trying to set up a proper kind of pathway for the awake craniotomy service at Royal Preston, which we don't really have at the moment. We're quite behind some of the other neurosurgical centres in the country. So that's one of the things that I'm helping my clinical director develop. We've just hired a neuropsychologist to help us in that pathway as well. And then on top of that, I have quite a big passion for teaching. So I really enjoy teaching. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm currently teaching at, you know, Preston, UCLand in Preston with the PAs. And I'm also doing some national OSCE examinations for the PA exams. So I think going forward, probably setting up this awake craniotomy pathway at Preston, and then, you know, training up some of the new doctors that we have coming in on different neurosurgical procedures. And then hopefully one day be independent enough to have my own theatre running for some of the, what we, you might say, the simple procedures that I, you know, be able to do unsupervised, like evacuating the subdural hematoma or insertion of an extraventricular drain, which the US PAs in neurosurgery do quite routinely, to be honest with you. So that's what I'm aiming towards.
Wow, amazing. Really exciting. Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to me and explaining a little bit more about your role as a physician associate in neurosurgery. I'm sure lots of the listeners will have enjoyed the episode and may have even had follow-up questions or want to find out more.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you so much for having me, first of all. It's been really enjoyable speaking with you. I am more than happy for people to contact me if they want any more information just about the PA role in general or about neurosurgery. And equally, if there's anyone out there who is interested in neurosurgery and wants a little bit of exposure to theatre time or, you know, exposure to the wards, I'll be more than happy to accommodate them under my supervision. So, you know, just reach out to me if you need anything.
Oh, brilliant. That's a really kind offer. And I'm sure people would love to take you up on that. I'll leave your contact details in the show notes so that people can find out how to get in touch with you just by looking on their device. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, James.
And thanks to you for listening as well. I hope you found that a really good episode to listen to find out more about a physician associate working in neurosurgery. Like I say, I'll leave the contact details that AFAC has given me in the show notes. And I hope you'll join me again for the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Physician Associate Podcast.